So I'm going to talk a little bit about what child death review is and what some of the results of doing these case reviews have done in terms of how we've improved our understanding of SUID. Can I just get a sense, how many of you guys work in states around safe sleep stuff? Anybody? Who are you? Quite a few of you. Okay, good. I know there's a couple of you representing national things. Margaret, can we talk about death certificates? And I'm going to talk a little bit, you know, sort of set the stage for the state presentations in terms of what they've been doing in terms of taking data to action. I don't have anything to disclose, unfortunately, but we are funded from the CDC, and also a lot of our funding at our national center that supports this work is also coming from HRSA and the Maternal and Child Health Bureau. So you were talking about the fact that the case registry model does build upon child death review activities. So we're using current variables that we actually had in our death reporting, our case reporting system, but we also built new variables for the states that are participating in the registry. Interestingly enough, I think we had about 14 other states that were participating in our national National Child Death Review Case Reporting System, and about 14 states asked to turn those variables on for them as well. And then this past year, we just turned them on for everybody. So states don't really have a choice anymore. What we are finding is the states that are funded have better data completeness, and their data quality is better, which is a good sign that you can fund a state with a little bit of money and you actually see big improvements in data quality. The system also kind of tries to avoid duplication of efforts by not creating a whole new data case reporting system. So we had this child death review case reporting system that was built from HRSA, with HRSA dollars since about 2002, and we manage it at our center. And I'll show you a little bit about that, but states use that whenever the states that are enrolled in the system, and there's 44 states that currently use that, when they do a death review, they use this case reporting system. It's web-based to enter their death review data into the system. We've got about almost 160,000 deaths in that database right now. And anyone who knows this, the form is extraordinarily complex in terms of collecting comprehensive data on the cases. And we probably should have brought some copies so people could see, but it's not just, a simple, what did the child died of? It's where were they sleeping? Where were they placed? Where were they found? What was done during the autopsy? What was done during the scene investigation? What did the team find to be the primary risk factors? We've got a whole set of categories about where the infant was found, what they were found with, what specifically the teams felt may have compromised the child's breathing, and it goes on and on and on in terms of being pretty complex. It also captures a lot of other information related to the primary caregivers, demographics, and a lot of information about trying to capture risk factors, even things as specific as do they speak English as a first language? Or are they active members of the military? So those kinds of questions. And then we have questions about the supervisors and then questions about the perpetrators if, in fact, there was an active omission or commission that caused the death. So it's a comprehensive system, and it avoids duplication of effort. What we're excited about is that the states that are using this kind of have to promise that they're going to review all of their SUID deaths in their states. And we notice there's a Healthy People 2020 objective for child death review that says that we're trying to get states to review at least 90% of all their SUIDs. Nationally, about 25 states are already doing that. All of the SUID-funded states are reviewing all of their SUIDs. It's really it's one of the things that they're judged against. So it's pretty exciting for us. And it's certainly, when you use this, one of the first things that happen is that people start improving how they investigate the deaths because they start coming to the table realizing they don't really know what happened. And if they don't know what happened, it's because they didn't investigate them well. So it really tries to drive improvements in either the medical examiner or the coroner system for investigating these deaths. And I won't go on the record publicly, but I'm pretty sure the reviews of these cases have led to some of that diagnostic shift where we're not calling everything SIDS anymore. In fact, there's quite a few places around the country, notably Los Angeles, that won't even allow that term to be used in their medical examiner's office. Now, I don't know if I think that's the way to go, but that is the shift. We've got this huge pendulum shift from calling everything SIDS to starting to call everything undetermined or accidental suffocation. This is the case reporting system that the states are using. It's comprehensive. I mentioned it's web-based. It allows local teams to enter data and the state to enter data and the state to see all the local data. And then at the national level, we can see de-identified data per case and aggregated as well. States and local teams are allowed to download all the data that they put in. It's a pretty adaptable system. In fact, we're adapting it right now for the Sudden Death and Young Registry. We'll come up with version 4.0. The system's free for states, and our center provides all the technical support for users. And it's housed at the Michigan Public Health Institute. Yeah, I hope. I have one of my colleagues here. That's where our center is funded out of. We saw this already, but the real heart of it is that it's a multidisciplinary review, and you're bringing lots of different data sources, and that's what really enriches your understanding of these cases. If you're only relying on the beloved death certificate, you wouldn't have much to tell. If you're only relying on the autopsy, you'd be missing the public health nurse's perspective or the social services perspective and all the different people that were involved with the family. So it really is meant to be a multidisciplinary review. These are the states that are currently using the case reporting system, not the SUID registry. And then I sort of said these are the states, you know, that use the registry. And this is the point I was mentioning earlier, is when you give people something a little bit, you can give them some training and technical assistance. We were astounded that this many states wanted to answer all of the SUID questions in the system. And then now everybody is. Maybe not quite to the quality we want, but everybody's participating. So does everybody know what child death review is? Because I'm going to spend a little bit of time on it. Does anybody here participate on child death review in their places? Where are you from, way back there? Oh, you're in Hershey. Okay. All right, yeah. Yeah, you've got one of the oldest running teams, or states, and robust because you have teams in every county. Hank, you guys, do you know each other? Hank's in Pittsburgh. Oh, you're not in Pittsburgh anymore. God, I always put you in Pittsburgh. Who else raised their hands for child death review that participates? Anybody else? Oh, well, yeah, you're our speaker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. St. Charles, here, Lake Charles. So child death review is bringing a multidisciplinary group of folks together. It varies around the country. So we have 37 states that have local teams. Those are pretty much county-based. They're usually run out of the health department or social services. People come together monthly or quarterly, or if you're really rural, you'll come together maybe once a year. And you basically bring as much case information as you can from your own agencies on all the children whose deaths you're going to be reviewing. And most states try to review all accidents, homicides, and suicides, and there's a real shift now towards states reviewing all natural causes as well. Depends on the jurisdiction. If you're a big state or a big team, you can't do every death, so you sort of are selective about what you review. We're a public health model that we promote versus some of the things that get promoted out of the Department of Justice, so we're focused on improving systems and the prevention of deaths, not putting folks in jail. And we try to balance the individual reviews versus an accumulation of data to try to understand trends and risk factors for kids. Another way to look at it is, this is sort of our new definition, is that we think of it as a team as an engaged multidisciplinary community telling a story, child's story, and that's one of the hallmarks of child death reviews. It's you're telling each child's story. You're trying to tell the whole story, not just about what happened at the time of death, but all the circumstances, sort of the path that the child was on that led to their death. And then you're trying to figure out how you can interrupt that pathway for other kids. A sort of a nice public health way to think of it. And then it does create, when you do it well, a good set of data from a broad ecological perspective, and you're supposed to use all of that information at your local level and at your state level as well as the national level to improve agency systems and prevent deaths. And you'll get some examples of that in a little bit. Child death review is now in 50 states. There's about 1,250 local and state teams. We're in Guam. The Department of Defense has review teams at all of their on the Army installations, and the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines do that at a national level. But they only are looking at right now at deaths of children where they suspect child abuse and neglect, except the Navy is now reviewing all of their sudden unexplained infant deaths. And they've implemented some really spectacular prevention work around safe sleep issues. They're doing some really nice work, and I think they're going to expand it to the Army. And then the tribes are slowly but surely coming on board. Navajo Nation has some death reviews as well as some of the tribes up in Montana. State laws mandate and support child death review in 44 states. 34 for local teams. I mentioned 39 states now are doing community reviews, and 12 states have only state level teams. And you know, Emily was mentioning that it's multidisciplinary. This is sort of a picture of who's at the review table. So it is meant to be very multidisciplinary. The average team size when we poll our states is probably about 20, 25 people. It's a lot of folks. It can be hard to manage, actually, sometimes, because they can be too big. But you do more and more. When child death review started in the 80s and 90s, it was really focused on investigators at the table. Now more and more we're really encouraging that people bring prevention partners to the table so that you can take those review findings and quickly translate them into action. I mentioned the purpose. Systems improvement is one thing, and then prevention, kind of primary prevention, is the other. So we really try to get our teams to focus on both. And that's been a big shift for a lot of teams, because they spend a lot of their years really focused on how to improve agency actions, especially around child welfare issues. And there's a whole new world out there of child abuse-related death reviews. Pennsylvania passed, Public Act 33, was it? That creates those specialized teams now as well. So within 30 days, they have to do the reviews. I want to talk a little bit about how the reviews tied into the registry have really improved death investigations. 70% of our grantees had completed the CDC, what's called the SUDIF, the Sudden Unexplained Infant Death Investigation form, or whatever that means, right? We don't really know. They completed it, or a version of it. So they basically reported that they conducted a comprehensive scene investigation and an autopsy on their cases. That jumped up to 87% in 2012. So that's good news for us. It means that the registry states are doing really good forcing improvements in their investigations. Some of the things that we're seeing is that they're offering training for investigators as a result of the reviews. Some states are making calls to the scene investigations within 24 hours that the body arrives at the medical examiners to make sure somebody gets out to the scene. When I started doing this job in the 90s, the typical response from law enforcement was, "Oh yeah, I was in my patrol car. The 911 came in. I called the medical examiner. He said the baby was found dead in bed. You can turn around at SIDS." That was really, really typical back then. Nobody thought that they had to go look at these scenes and find out what was happening. And we just lost a lot of years of learning and understanding what prevention's all about, because we didn't get a sense of what some of these risk factors were. A lot of our states now are stressing DAL reenactment. Some of our states have bought DAL scene investigation kits for all of their regions. New Jersey went out and bought DAL kits. I think Pennsylvania did, even though you're not one of our grantees. A couple other places, Georgia as well. And Louisiana did as well. And then what we're really trying to do is figure out where these deaths fit in this sort of spectrum. And without question, the middle bar, there's another way to make this arrow, which is to make the middle gray, because there is a real gray area that we still are trying to understand. So to be considered a SIDS, everything's got to be pristine, technically. Everything's got to be negative. Negative autopsy, negative scene, no medical history. Those are the SIDS cases. To be asphyxia, you pretty much have to have strong evidence that the child's face was obstructed. Their whole nose and their mouth was obstructed. And then in the middle is all this other stuff that we're trying to broaden our understanding of. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of some examples to see what you think. So this is not an unusual scene that someone would go to. This is, you know, in the old days we would have said, well, they had a bassinet. But we didn't really know what that meant. We just knew they had a bassinet. It's obvious they're not using it for the baby's sleeping environment. Or the baby died on the couch. We don't really know what happened there, right? Does anybody have an idea? Can you make a judgment? or the baby died in their crib. But in the old days, we didn't know about all that stuff that was in it. We just knew the baby was in a crib. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions and see what you guys think in terms of what would you call these? I'll give you some examples of death: SIDS, asphyxia, undetermined, or other. So this was a 3-month-old infant sleeping alone in a pack and play, found not breathing. What would you guys call that? Yeah, trained. What if they were on their stomach on a pillow face down, face fully obstructed? What would you call that one? Asphyxia? Anybody want to change? Anybody? Pretty clear on that one, right? But we needed that little piece of information to be able to figure this out. So we'd probably call that one asphyxia. What if the infant's face was to the side when found? What would you guys call it? Anybody? Pardon? Undetermined, did I hear? Yeah, probably undetermined. Many would. In the old days, I don't know what people, that's still probably, we don't know it. What if the infant had been placed on their back and hadn't been checked for 10 hours, the parent was intoxicated, been placing the baby, and there were multiple CPS reports for neglect? What are you guys going to call that one? There's a lot of bias in there, right? There's a lot of bias. But the baby was face up. But a lot of people in the old days, before they did investigations, might have called that a homicide for all we know, because they would have looked at this other stuff. But it was really about where the baby was that mattered. This was a 2-month-old with their parents. 2 hours later, the parents fell asleep. Parents are average weight, no alcohol, average type of bedding. Nice parents, you know. What would you guys call that one? But then you found that the baby was found between but not covered by blankets or their parents' bodies. Interesting, right? These are hard. You can see how hard this is and why all the scene information is so important.
I would say that could be fit, but my understanding mm-hmm. is that because of the environment, that in, I don't know if everywhere, but in many places, that would
Yeah. This one would really have a range, I think. This would be all over the place. Margaret?
What did the autopsy find? Was there an autopsy?
Negative. These are all negative autopsies, sorry.
Did they do an autopsy?
Right, they did on all of these. But what if the father reported that the infant was under his arms when found? See how it changes things? But when found, who knows what happened 2 hours while he was sleeping? You can start to see how hard these are. I really put these in just so we'd have something interesting this morning to talk about. What if the house was dirty and messy, prior child abuse allegations, and the floor was shag carpet? I don't know what the heck that has to do with anything, but and it was 1960s orange shag. Does that kind of change? See how this is the stuff that changes people's perceptions. So one of the things that the SUID project has really tried to do is force death scene investigations. And what the death scene investigations really promote is the use of these dolls. And with the use of placards that say where the baby was found, where they were placed. And so this would give you, you know, the baby was in a pack and play, but when you realize that it was face down in a pillow, everything looks pristine except for where the baby was sleeping. That tells a different story than if you just heard that the baby was in a pack and play. This is an example of where the baby was placed. It's actually just a 7-pound doll. That's actually my daughter, her new boyfriend, this was a long time ago, it's not her boyfriend anymore. They showed up in my office and I said, "Hey, I got something for you guys to do." And he's like, "What?" I go, "You got to get in bed." He jumped right in. It was hysterical. And she's like, "Mom, I don't think my pearls really make it here." But so this was found. See, the baby was placed like that, but when they described how the baby was found, that tells a different story too. We wouldn't know that if we weren't doing these investigations. This is another found. That looks pretty good, doesn't it? Pack and play, nothing in the crib. Everything's perfect. And if that was a negative autopsy, this would probably be a SIDS, I would think. This was placed, and that was found. Baby had fallen off the bed into sheets. So you start getting a sense of why these are so important. And I want to talk about, you know, we're going to get into the next presentation, which is the prevention piece, but the question is, why does it matter? If we don't understand these sleep environments and try to improve through the registry states, the quality of death scene investigations, we just don't have the information to drive our understanding of risk factors. This is an old, this was an old ad from a long time ago that I think kind of tells us where we've come around safe sleep as well. So this was the old air nurse. Look at that, for tending baby at home, when visiting, for bathing babies. And if you don't think we haven't come far, Hank, this is right up your alley. Check this out, for traveling. Isn't that hysterical? Oh, it gives your baby air cushion comfort with safety in car, on train, on bus, or on plane. Isn't that amazing? So, you know, I hope this is where we're going to be in a, you know, 5 years from now, is we're going to look at pictures of baby beds with pillows and junk and all sorts of stuff, because you can still buy all of that online, as outrageous as some of this.